Okay, final hour with Eric here, Herm, as we're talking about Son of a Farmer, GMO Foods. We'll take your calls with Eric in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Let's go right back to the phones here now with Eric Herm, our guest. East of the Rockies, John is with us from Lima, Ohio. Go ahead, John.
Hi, George. Hi, Eric. Happy Thanksgiving to both of you.
You too, John.
Thank you.
Thank you. With all due respect, I have a comparative analogy, if I could.
Sure.
I think I know George has children, and I don't know if you do or not, Eric. But remember when you'd take your son or daughter to the pediatrician with a bad throat, and the doctor used to get out this Q-tip on steroids and go in and take a throat culture, and then prescribe the appropriate medicine. Well, then they threw that away and started writing out antibiotics for a red throat and started beating the parents over the head for the overuse and misuse of antibiotics. So maybe I missed something in the beginning of the program, but why did you guys go down this road to begin with?
You talking about in agriculture in general?
Well, yeah. I mean, if your seed, I used to have a cherry tomato garden when I was little. We'd toss some tomatoes out there. We'd have volunteers that would come up naturally on their own, resistant to anything. So, it sounds, were you forced to go down the GMO road?
No, what happened was it was
or tricked.
Very cleverly marketed to farmers. This was, in a lot of instances in our area, it came out like, oh, try this new product we got. It's seeds that basically all you have to do is plant and spray with a herbicide, and that's it. That's all you have to do. And that was very appealing to farmers initially because you're looking at cutting back on labor, you're cutting back on fuel.
Time.
It's a much easier way to farm. That's first and foremost.
So you probably thought it was a godsend, Eric, at the time, didn't you?
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to worry about your weeds anymore. You just plant this seed. You can spray it even when the crop's up and growing, and it won't kill the crop anymore. Farmers were like, yeah, technology's awesome.
Was there anybody astute enough at the time to say, I don't know about this?
There were, but, a lot of farmers didn't go that road. You have a lot of organic farmers out there who didn't get tricked into it. But, for guys that were struggling and hanging on and stretch very thin economically, it seemed like a good idea at the time. And with, when you've been doing business, it's like when you're going to you walk into the barbershop, it's like, hey, do I need a haircut? Why, sure you do. And that's what's happened with agriculture. We're listening to the wrong people. Our consultants are basically working for these chemical companies. And unless a guy's really willing to take a lot more time to do his own research, and you're talking about most farmers are wearing 10 or 12 hats already, and I'm not making excuses for farmers.
No, I understand.
I'm just telling you that's how it happened.
I'm going to open up a special hotline this hour as well, Eric, for farmers. They can get through a little easier if they use this line, 818-817-0021. Of course, you can call on any of the other lines, but 818-817-0021. Just for you farmers who are using GMO seeds, I'd like to see what life has been like for you. Matt in Hercules, California, you're up with us. Go ahead, Matt.
Well, hey, George. Coast Insider Matt here. Hope everybody had a nice holiday. I've got a question and a comment, and I'll go with my comment first. My comment is I just think it's completely outrageous as a believer in the Constitution that it's so difficult for the American population and the world population in other European countries that are being clamped down on just to have the access to healthy, nutritious food. And my question is, I'm looking to start a aquaponics setup, and I have a question about any comments or tips you would have on aquaponics, and then also covering that system and what I would use, what type of materials to prevent, pollination of perhaps any GMOs that could come in contact with my harvest. Thank you very much. I'll take my answer off the air. Take care, everybody.
Eric, what do you think about that?
I think aquaponics is an excellent way to address, especially in urban areas, because you can do a lot more in a smaller space. I'm not an aquaponics guy, but my advice with the seeds is make sure that you, wherever you get your seeds, that it's from organic seed companies. There are several companies who have taken the Safe Seed Pledge, and you can look that up, because Monsanto has bought up a few organic, or some not organic companies, but they bought up some gardening companies that produce seed. And I wouldn't recommend doing business with some of them.
Seeds that are being put in the seed bank, Eric, do you know if they're GMO seeds or good old Mother Nature seeds?
Well, there was one I know that got started by here recently in the last few years. I think it was up in Iceland by part of the Rockefeller Foundation, Bill Gates. You know, him, the Rockefeller Foundation set up one. I had no idea what's going into those seed vaults. They definitely protect their seeds, though, as far as the genetically modified. Make no mistake about it. They've got land-grant universities all across the country doing research in genetically modified wheat, genetically modified grass, and other crops. Rice has been out there for quite a few years. There was some farmers in Arkansas who won a $750 million lawsuit just a couple months ago that dated back to 2007 with Bayer Crop Science. A pharmaceutical company who is now the second largest genetically modified seed company in the country.
How old can a seed be before it will not germinate?
It depends on the crop. It depends on cotton can last several years. Your germination rate just goes down a little bit each year over time.
But it does get old, right?
Yes, it can.
Can you have a seed that's 5,000 years old and plant it?
Oh, I don't know how that seed would have survived. Maybe if it had been frozen or in some special cases, but...
It'll decompose or something.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Mineral Point, Wisconsin.
A lot of seeds will do that over a five-year period. Yeah.
All right, Mark, go ahead. Mark in Mineral Point, you there?
Yeah, this is Mark.
Go ahead, Mark.
Happy Thanksgiving to everyone. I work on an organic farm and as an intern, and I just wanted to let everybody know that is an option that you can leave the game and go back to the simple life and get room and board, and some of these places will give you a weekly stipend to grow organic food and work with the local people that are buying the food.
Would you ever eat any GMO-type food, Mark, again?
No, I'm a chiropractor's kid. Dad, besides GMO, just all the chemicals that are put into the food, just certain foods I wouldn't eat. I would never eat GMO.
All right, good. Thanks for the comments. So tell me, what's it like to work on an organic farm, Eric?
Well, it's a lot more work, first and foremost, a lot more labor.
Very intense, isn't it?
Yeah, I've got 250 acres that it's in the organic transition phase right now. It's just you got to be a lot more vigilant and stay on top of things. Like the caller was saying, there's a lot of farms that will take workers. There's programs like the Woof, they call it the Woofing It program, that you can go and I encourage that for young people to go and learn, get these life skills that you need, at least just so you'll be able to know how to grow your own food for your family.
Can you make money with organic food?
Absolutely. I mean, you look at most organic crops, particularly in commercial production, traditionally you've always gotten double the price. That's the way cotton has been. You've gotten twice the price of normal commodity crops.
All right, let's go to Jeremiah in Detroit, my old hometown. Hi, Jeremiah, go ahead.
Hey, how's it going, George?
Well, the Lions lost today, but...
Yeah, that was bad.
Yeah.
I just want to make a comment about the whole process. If you look on the macro scale, if most farming is done with GMO and it's like over the 90% of the main crops are GMO, and you have to keep spraying more and more herbicide or the stuff to keep the weeds down, and they keep coming back stronger and stronger, eventually you're going to get to the point where you can't grow anything at all. And these types of monocrop, that's the stage for just mass starvation. The other comment I want to make is that this is where it seems to kind of come back around, all these different subjects you talk about. I was trying to get on last night with the, you're talking about prophecies and so on and so forth. And
yeah.
I've been involved with the Dakota people in South Dakota, and I met a few of them, talked to them, gone on a couple of their spiritual events, and they talk about this kind of thing all the time. They don't have a specific scenario, but they talk about how, like, eventually, you know, the Western world, the scientifically based, you know, non-spiritual world is just going to come apart. You know, and that's basically a lot of their elders are just sitting around waiting for it to happen.
Well, that is absolutely true. What are the dangers one day, Eric, that we just can't plant seeds anymore? Is that even possible?
Certainly. I mean, you can basically get your soul to a point where it's basically flatlined. And a lot of the land around here, you're talking about the organic matter is less than 1%.
Yeah.
And when you get to that point, it's very difficult for those crops to survive in any difficult situation, such as a short-term drought or, you know, fend off any disease or insects or anything like that. We need to be paying so much more attention to our soil life in agriculture than we are in the commercial agriculture production. But like I said, it's that assembly line mentality. We're trying to more product for, you know, it's quality. I mean, it's quantity over quality. And we need to be putting life back into our soil. That's our bread and butter right there.
All right, let's go to our farmer line. Nick is in Pleasant Hill, Ohio. Hey, Nick, do you farm with GMOs or what do you do?
Well, we don't farm with GMOs if we can help it.
Good.
What I mean by that is I'm a dairy farmer, and sometimes I have to purchase grain off the farm to feed the cows. And in my area, I don't have a lot of control over where that grain comes from. In other words, some of my neighbors use GMOs, some don't, but it all goes to the same collection point. So if I go in to make a purchase of some extra corn or some soybean meal, which is a byproduct of the soy oil industry, I don't know where that came from. So we, I guess, unintentionally probably do feed some GMOs, but I, as a rule, try to not do that. Now, I don't have any scientific background for any of this, but I do know I was raised on a dairy farm, and we did not use chemicals that I remember at all. We cultivated our row crops, and, you know, we got along just fine.
Was your output, Nick, was the production relatively the same, or have you dramatically increased it now?
I wouldn't say that we've dramatically increased it. However, I have seen that we didn't raise soybeans because we were feeding cattle. We were raising mostly corn and alfalfa, wheat and oats so we could get the straw to use. And today, you see most of the transition has gone to corn and soybeans. Our cattle are fed in this country more of a high grain-based ration and not so much forage. So by the grains being GMO grains, the cattle are actually ingesting even more GMO product than if we were actually still on a forage base. Now, we were talking about soil life a little bit ago. There's a study was done that we went to a seed meeting and saw where farmers had raised Roundup Ready soybeans and followed that crop with wheat. And it was interesting to see the root structure on the wheat plants was very poor compared to the structure of the wheat plants following non-GMO soybeans. Then that was supposedly that was linked back to the residual Roundup left in the soil. So if that is still left in the soil, my opinion is that that is still there and is taken up in those wheat plants, even the straw taken off and used for the cattle. They're ingesting that because they're going to eat some of that straw. And I don't know. I just think it's one of the big things about GMO was it allowed an open door for large farming. Farming was hard work. And it takes a lot of hours, a lot of time. You know, a whole family could go out and work to keep those fields of row crops clean. When Roundup Ready come along, wow, you could plant soybeans anywhere. One farmer could do what maybe 10 or 11 were doing just instantly. And now, I mean, it's gone even further. And proof of that would be that, you know, I farm on the farm my great-grandfather did, and he had 70 acres and fed his whole family. He didn't work in town. He didn't do anything else. And now we have neighbors who farm 3,000 and 4,000 acres, and somebody in the household works in town, and they work a part-time job also just to make ends meet.
Yeah.
So the efficiency of what we're doing, yes, we're covering a lot of acres in a low amount of time, but the cost of it is really out of sight. And a lot of that has to do with what we were talking about with the patented seeds, the royalty fees that are paid on the seed, paid on the chemicals, you know, machinery increases. So I think there's still hope. We can still get back to doing things the right way, but we've become very dependent on chemicals, and that is what is allowing us to well, we're a steamrolling operation. I mean, and we're talking about a massive, massive system here. American agriculture, that's really the heartbeat of what makes it go.
That's absolutely right, Nick. And, you know, part of the fear is when you scare people about food, they will do just about anything that they want you to do. He's right on, Eric, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, it goes back to the late 60s, early 70s with Secretary of Agriculture Butts, you know, get big or get out and plant fence row to fence row. This has been a long time coming. That's what guys started doing in the 70s and 80s. They got bigger. And but that's, we're proving that model's not working, because if that's the case, there wouldn't be more farmers going bankrupt and getting out of business year after year. I really think that the future is smaller farms, smaller organic farms that were, you can make everything healthier. And
who's buying up the land, Eric? Foreigners? Chinese? Who's buying up all our farmland?
China's buying up quite a bit, but it's, you know, it just depends on the area. You've got wealthy landowners. We're losing some to urbanization. We're losing some to basically desertification or soil degradation. You know, it just depends on where you are.
All right. Well, you stay with us. We're going to come back with final phone calls for you, Eric Erm, on Coast to Coast AM. His book, Son of a Farmer, you can find it, of course, all over the place, including his website, which is the same name. We'll be back in a moment with final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Well, what really happened on October 20th, 1967? Jeff Hilling joins us next hour as we talk about the great Bigfoot film mystery, and also get up to coasttocoastam.com and take a look at the highlight picture of the Patterson film, because we'll be talking about that. We'll come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with Eric Erm and your final phone calls as we talk about GMO foods on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, let's take our final phone calls. We'll pick it up by going to Dave in Anaheim, California. It'll get us started here, David. Go ahead.
Hey, George. I love this. I mean, I love your show, buddy. You're Thank always you. On board no matter what we're talking about, man. It's a good show.
Thank you, sir.
I wanted to ask this guy because you know, when this whole organic thing started coming out, I was like, oh, you know, whatever, you know, it's healthy, that's great. And then I watched a show recently a while back, BS with Penn and Teller.
Mm-hmm.
And what they say is the organic farming, it doesn't, you know, it's not as good, it's not as productive, it's not as fast. And with the population we have, we wouldn't be able to feed like a quarter of the people on the planet if we went back to organic. And also, as far as like in Africa and stuff, like a few years ago, the Australian people talked these African people out of buying, out of, you know, taking free food, you know, and they let the people starve because of this thing of these, you know, phantom chemicals or whatever. You said chemicals 300 times during this show. And I just think they should be a little more responsible as far as, you know, this stuff is helping people, you know, and I know if you don't eat anything, you'll die. I know that for a fact. So do you have any comment about that?
Eric, what do you think about those two major points?
Yeah, I'll call BS on Penn and Teller's claims for sure, because I've done both. When I first moved back to the farm in 05,
I was doing experiments with organic fertilizers in the field side by side, and it was my discoveries with organic fertilizers that I could see with my own eyes that it was producing more, no doubt. With a healthy crop rotation, organic fertilizers, hands down, you outproduce chemical agriculture. GMOs, for a fact, do not produce more than conventional seeds in the same climate, the same situation. The Rodale Institute just released a 30-year study that organic farming both outproduced and outperformed economically chemical agriculture in those trials. 30-year study.
What about countries abroad? People are starving, not getting any food. What can we do for them?
Well, we can empower them with the skills that they need to do. The only GMOs is going to create more starvation and more malnourishment in the long term. And the use of chemicals is only going to temporarily mask the problems that we have, and it's going to compound those problems, intensify them over the years. We need to localize our food productions in an organic matter. You can, Charles Wilbur, who had the world record tomatoes, he did it all with his own special compost. He grew four tomato plants that would produce about 2,000 pounds of tomatoes. And he grew them 21 foot high, and he would always laugh at farmers that were trying to plant 30 or 40 tomato plants because he said all you need is three or four. And these farmers can do it. It doesn't matter where you are. Cuba is a perfect example. They started getting more into localizing their food production in the late 80s and early 90s whenever they went through all the high oil prices when Russia was going through their turmoil. And they're healthier now. They're healthier than ever. They're doing better in school with their kids because they're eating better. We need a local food production that's going to be everywhere in every region, every country.
All right, let's go to our farmer line, Devin in St. Joseph, Missouri. Devin, what's your story?
Hi, George. Hi, guys. How's it going?
Hi, Dev. Good.
I grow corn and soybeans, and, my experience has been non-GMO crops just don't do as well as GMO crops.
Non-GMO crops. Tell me why.
Soybeans are pretty, you can still sell those market non-GMO soybeans right now. And basically that's just a non-Roundup bean. And the yield is just not there anymore. The Roundup Ready beans have really caught up with them.
Would you eat a GMO food?
Definitely.
Do you?
Yes.
You would?
Yes.
All right.
Definitely.
How long have you been farming with the Roundup crops?
Me personally, for about 10 years.
10 years?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So you're going to get
I'll put our yields up against our neighbors that have been doing genetically modified cotton around here for 10 years. I'll put our yields up against theirs any day of the week.
Well, I can't comment on cotton because this isn't cotton country. But as far as soybeans go, there's definitely a yield drag on non-GMO soybeans.
What's the difference, Devin? What do you think?
Well, they're not actively breeding non-GMO soybeans anymore, so that has a little bit to do with it.
Right.
But it's easier to keep Roundup Ready beans, for instance, which is glyphosate tolerant. It's easier to keep the weeds out of them. It really is.
That's what I was going to ask. If it was weeds that was hurting the yield on those others.
Management, weed pressure.
Yeah.
That has a lot to do with it.
Do you still spray, Devin, with Roundup, or you don't have to do that at all now?
Well, Roundup's kind of a useless chemical. It used to kill everything. Now it's pretty much just a grass killer. I mean, it won't hit the tough weeds anymore. We have to use other chemicals for that.
That's why they're pushing it for homes now.
Well, they can make a lot more money. You go buy a pre-mixed Roundup bottle at Ace Hardware, and it costs you about 100 times what it costs us to buy it.
Yeah. Oh, no, you're right. And it's a little tiny spray thing.
Right. We can buy it it costs about $4 an acre to spray it.
Right. Devin, do you have any concerns with GMO foods?
Well, I don't personally. I don't think they're ever going to go away. They're here to stay from my standpoint, no one's trying to get rid of them right now. I mean, there's a few that are pushing organic, but I see organic food more as a vegetable type thing than a corn soybean thing.
In the old days, though, were you able to just use regular seeds and you didn't have to pay for it, right?
Well, we still had to pay for it. What you get out of paying is what they call the tech fee, which is basically you're buying the paying the Monsanto to use the Roundup Ready gene.
Right, but I mean, in the old days when it was non-GMO, where would you get your seeds? You'd keep them back,
you still
right?
You had to buy the seed. You just didn't have to pay the tech fee.
Which would be a big difference?
Well, I think it's about $10 a bag, and a bag costs about $40 right now for beans.
Hey, Devin, with soybeans, what's the with the genetically modified soybeans today, what's the yield in comparison to what you guys were producing 10 or 15 years ago?
Well, right now, farm average right now is about 55 bushel acre on soybeans. And, before 45 bushel acre was, I mean, that was a good bean. Most guys were still in the 30s, 35, somewhere in there.
And where are the price of soybeans now as opposed to 10 years ago?
Right now, they've gone up. They're, you can get about $11 a bushel for soybeans. And before, in my lifetime, I've seen them as low as $4.50.
Yeah, well, food prices are going through the roof anyway.
Right, right.
Yeah. Okay, very good. All right, thanks for that insight there, Devin. So, it does have a few supporters out there, Eric.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like I said, 90% of four major commodity crops, guys are planting it. So, I mean, all my neighbors around here, they're going to be for it, most of them. You're not going to find them saying many bad things about it, except for the guys until they get to the point where they can't kill their weeds.
So if I'm doing my mathematics correctly, you make about $650. Is that true? Is that right? $650 an acre with your soybeans? You get 55 bushels and they're what, 11 bucks a bushel?
Yeah. Sounds
that's it. $650, that's what they make per acre?
Well, yeah, before you factor in, they're probably spending close to $100 an acre just on seed and herbicide cost alone.
What's the land alone cost these days?
Oh, here where I live in West Texas, land is as cheap probably as anywhere in the country because nobody's moving out here.
And there's no rain.
Yeah, we're in a major drought. Land around here is $600 or $700 an acre, but in some places in the country, it's going to be $3,000 to $4,000, if not more.
If in Illinois you can get on black soil, you can get $7,000 to $8,000 an acre, can't you?
Yeah, especially when you get closer to urban areas, it skyrockets.
I don't see how a farmer can make money at $650 an acre with soybeans.
Oh, that's a lot better than cotton farmers do most years. Trust me.
So you guys aren't making a zillion dollars then, are you?
No. I mean, in farming, that's the what people need to understand with, farmers, we get a bad rep sometimes because of subsidies, but really without subsidies, farmers wouldn't make it in commercial production at all. That's what affords us. That's the carrot on the stick, we're chasing. Subsidies just be able, that enables farmers to continue to farm. We have enough money to pay out, and really, some years you got to borrow money to pay your taxes and start all over again. Farmers are living on borrowed money every year.
Let's go to Scranton, Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Joe. Thank you.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving to you and Eric, and it's an honor to be on your show again. I've been listening, and Eric, it's a great job you're doing explaining the situation.
Thank you.
I plan on getting your book at some point in time. My thoughts were that, a glib comment. I don't know when we started having czars in America instead of directors, but agencies. But
when the Romanovs took over.
Yeah, now we'll go to collectives for the farms, I guess. But my question was, you mentioned about young people being attracted to farming. Knowing the culture we have today, I don't really see that happening to a great extent. My thoughts were, as I was listening to you talk about that, this administration recently passed some legislation, I believe, to help the veterans find jobs when they come back from Iraq and Afghanistan, and we started with soldiers and farmers in this country. Is there the political will out there, and there any programs out there to encourage perhaps returning veterans to get trained and maybe get some land, you know, the 40 mules in an acre to get back into farming, get America back into farming on a smaller scale?
There is. I've actually seen several articles here in the last 6 months about more veterans returning and choosing a farm life. There is a couple of programs. I don't know the names of them, but it seems like there is some energy and some dollars being spent in that direction. And, you know, as far as young people, I was part of a panel about a month ago down in Austin, Texas. There was over 50 young people there who were wanting to be farmers. They're working on these small farms and trying to learn some of the tools of the trade. And, you know, they're going out and starting their own farm, maybe just in their backyard at first, but, you know, they're getting 2 to 5 acres and making a go of it.
Okay, next up, let's go to Charlie in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Charlie, go ahead.
Hey, George, what's up?
Good.
Eric, you were talking about Monsanto?
Yes.
They brought out Seeds of Change, I heard.
What are Seeds of Change?
Meaning?
They're a seed company. They grow organic seeds. They're from, I think, New Mexico.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I have an organic vegetable garden and a community garden in Brooklyn, and people are like, wow, Brooklyn organic. We have a kid's garden. You got to see these kids go crazy over there.
That would be cool.
It's great.
Yeah.
George.
Yeah, I've been to Brooklyn a few times. You guys are doing some cool things there.
Yeah, it's at Floyd Bennett Field, our gardens. It's like 8 acres or something.
Yeah.
George, is there a way you could do more shows like this?
Well, we always do. We sprinkle them in, Charlie.
And
so, yes.
Guy, you should get on a show called Jerry Gentile. He owns Baker Creek Seed Company.
Okay. We'll check into him.
Jerry Gentile. I got onto his website today.
Okay, great. And so let me ask you a question, Charlie. In the balconies of all these apartments in Brooklyn, are people growing like tomatoes and things like that? They're doing that, huh? That's cool.
I do everything organic. No,
good for you.
But how did we grow stuff before pesticides? It was all organic. We had no problems at all.
Hey, thanks, Charlie. Time for a couple more calls. Angela is in Brownsville, Pennsylvania. Hey, Angela, go ahead.
Oh, hi. Good morning.
Hi.
I am very proud to be a farmer's granddaughter. I wanted to make a quick point, then I have a question. One of your prior guests, George, spoke about how eating genetically modified foods can cause the mutations in one's colon cells, where your colon cells actually produce the pesticides. So think about that when you're...
Yeah, that was Jeffrey Smith, by the way, Eric.
Yeah, yeah. My grandparents had a very small personal organic farm before organic was a popular word, barely an acre. It was wildly productive. They just composted well, and they also used coarsely powdered rock that they got from the local quarry. There's an organization I read about recently called Remineralize the Earth, and that's their thing. Is they've researched about putting powdered granite on gardens, and they even advocate spreading it randomly around sides of highways or parks or whatever. And they found that this, when the soil is properly mineralized, you don't have pests, you don't have insects, you don't have the weeds taking over. And, of course, the, you know, vegetables, whatever you grow, are just, you know, intensely vitamin, you know, more vitamins and, you know, much, much better for us. And, you know, like your other callers pointed out, you know, we lived for a darn long time without these pesticides. And, you know, I don't think we're meant to be eating that stuff.
Yeah, I've used trace mineral and volcanic rock and had some incredible results with those.
It's Shane Stern in Nashville, Tennessee. Go ahead, Shane. We'll get you in here.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I'm an Iraq veteran, recently graduated from culinary school.
Okay.
And currently work in the industry. Been doing a lot of reading about, you know, GMOs. I eventually noticed that leadership positions in the USDA and FDA were occupied by ex-Monsanto employees and other biotech corporations.
That's true.
I know the awareness of GMOs is growing, but I don't think many are aware of this massive conflict of interest across the board. it's interesting that if you go to the Monsanto website, you can find a section called For the Record, where Monsanto has a series of articles defending or trying to debunk claims and rumors circulating about the company. I just want to comment on that.
Yep, we've asked them time and time again to come on the program, and we stopped asking after they never came on. Once they sent a little statement to my producer, Lisa, and that was it. They don't want to go head-to-head with you, Eric.
No, that's what I'm finding out. It's they work in the shadows, you know.
Well, they're making a lot of money in the shadows.
Yes, they are.
They sure are indeed. Eric, where do we get your book? One more time.
You can go to my website. It's got a link directly to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any major bookstore. Your mom and pop's bookstores can get it for you. So check it out. I got a free. Right. If you go to my website and you sign up, you can get the first 20 pages for free to see if you dig my style of writing and what I'm all about.
All right, good for you. That's a smart marketing technique.
Thank you.
All right.
I'm learning.
Eric, take care of yourself. In a moment, we're going to talk about Bigfoot for the next couple hours this Thanksgiving night program. Some incredible stuff. Go up to our website, coasttocoastam.com. Take a look at the Patterson film. We're going to talk about that. What do you think? I'm George Norrie. We shall be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.